Welcome, everyone, to the Analog Assault Podcast, episode 109. And this week, the crew has a very special guest, Job from Song of Iron. So let's go!
You're listening to Analog Assault, a video game podcast by Mulehorn Gaming.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode. And we got a very special guest with us tonight. But before we introduce him and get into what he's about in his game, a little housekeeping. So, guys, you know, if you'd like, I had to go with a little. Was it Tommy Boy? I think it's Tommy Boy, right? Housekeeping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So if you like the podcast, you like what you see on our Twitch page, hit that sub button to help keep the lights on for MHG. And you can always listen to the audio version on iTunes or wherever you prefer to listen to your podcasts. Audibly? Is that a word?
Audibly. And,
yeah. Yeah. And of course, if you'd like to be more involved in the community, you can jump right into our Discord and just chat with a bunch of us cool cats in there. So we have Lupo, Crow, and Prime, and our very special guest Joe from Song of Iron. What's up, man?
What's going on? How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I'm super excited, man, to talk about your game and kind of the whole process of how you got to where you are now. But I ask all our guests this, so I have to ask you. You got to tell me your story, man. How did you get from Mini Joe to Grown Up Joe to where you are now with all your experience and game development and everything like that?
Sure. It's been a long journey, that's for sure. It feels like, at least. I was lucky enough to go to college for game design. It's not the sort of college that you're usually very happy about going to. It wasn't the best place, but I was lucky enough to find a pretty good crew of friends that we were pretty competitive with each other, and that kind of was the driving force that kind of like actually where we got a lot of the skills and stuff and what kind of helped propel us to making it into the industry initially and then going from there. I started at the studio that does Big Buck Hunter, the barroom arcade game that tons of people are familiar with.
You know?
Yeah, so I started there. That place is called Play Mechanics. It's this tiny little studio in Chicago area. And I worked on the HD version of that. And then I worked a little bit on Terminator Salvation, which is also another big arcade game with a huge gun. It's in a lot of movie theaters still, I think. So that was like that was about as scrappy of a job as it gets as far as video games are concerned. I mean, it's like real old technology, you know, no tools for creators and stuff. But it was an amazing experience because it was just like total bare bones stuff, and you had to make all that stuff look good in that way. And so it really, you know, it's just, people say it all the time about anything, right? It's like you spend years and years in school and you learn five times as much in the first 3 months of actually doing it. And it was totally true at that place. And then I was only there for a little bit, and then I came out to California to work at Cryptic Studios, which is an MMO house. I worked on Champions Online, Star Trek Online just a little bit, and then I worked a ton on Neverwinter Online, which, I mean, that was like 5-8 years ago that came out, something like that. I think it's like 8 years ago, but I did a ton of that stuff. I was the lead animator on Neverwinter, and I did a bunch of the combat stuff in there. That was a really fun project because it was very, I was able to be really creative with all the abilities. The MMO space is actually really cool for animators because it's sort of just like click a button and then it's okay for the characters to just do whatever for a while. And so we get to kind of get a little crazy. And it's pretty fun. And then we went for a little bit more of a reactionary combat system than your classic MMO for Neverwinter. So there was a lot more space for creativity with that. And that was pretty cool. And then from there, I got to, I was lucky enough to get a contract job at on Halo 5 up in Seattle. So I moved up for that. Yeah. I had a few friends. I had a few kind of friends that were up there, and I had been putting together a reel of all my animation work and just wanted feedback. And I had a call with their manager within a few hours of sending them the reel just to get some feedback on it. Like, hey, I'm getting ready to start looking for a job. And they're like, actually, hold on. And I'm like, let me go talk to my boss.
That's awesome.
So then I took a test for them, which is a pretty normal thing for animators. This is what, like, they'll ask you to like do a few animations just to kind of prove that you actually can do that sort of stuff. Then I worked on Halo 5 for like a year and a half leading up to launch, then post content for a little while. Mm-hmm. And then I did a bunch of stuff. I did a ton of the assassinations for the game. Like, I think 4 or 5 of them I did. And nice. Then, if you're familiar with any of them, the Backbreaker one was mine. That's probably my favorite one that I did.
That's nice. The one I still have equipped.
Nice. Yeah. Awesome. Good. Yeah. That was the first one we did for the game, and I think it kind of set the tone for a lot of the other ones, because we went pretty over the top with a lot of them for 5, which was really fun.
Yeah.
And then I did a bunch of the Warden combat stuff, and I did his assassinations also.
Okay.
And some of that cool stuff. That guy was crazy. He was tons of floating parts. That's all manually animated and stuff. Yeah. So that was really cool. Yeah, and then that was sort of like the last big game I've released. And then, you know, I'm constantly dabbling at home. And so it kind of led into, like you were saying earlier, the shooter. That was where it really kind of started. And then yeah. I was like, well, this is way too much. And then massive shit tone shift into a side-scrolling Viking game.
Yeah.
That's awesome, it's been crazy, man. Though.
Yeah. So 15 years, 15 years.
Yeah, animated? just about. Yeah, dang, that's crazy. Man.
And you've worked on some pretty awesome games, like very like well known games that most people like. If you just met a gamer, you'd be like, "Hey, you know about this game?" They'd be like, "Oh yeah, I played that game." You know?
Yeah, it's nothing to sneeze at by any means.
Yeah,
yeah, it's been fun. It's sure. It's I love it, man. It's great.
Yeah. So I gotta ask you. Are you also a gamer? And if you are, what kind of like what's like your top three and what kind of influenced you in to get into the industry, you know?
Yeah, sure. Oh, I mean, totally. Absolutely. I think I had an Atari, which I kind of consider my first game system. I think I was didn't really get it, but like it was there. I remember Mega Man X being one of my first like true love games. And playing that just over and over again. I was finally old enough to like understand what I was doing and like consume that as like entertainment. And I still love that game. I still constantly think about it. It's influencing Song of Iron in a few ways. Just some of the system types that they've done. I still think about it all the time. Yeah, I mean, the Zelda games just were massive for me, Ocarina of Time. I mean, it's like classic stuff. It's like, there's a reason everybody knows these games, right? They're just so influential. And I'm so happy to have kind of been through the line, like been through all of that stuff and watched it grow. And I constantly am pulling stuff out of those games when I'm working on mine. Because I think, you know, technology doesn't make games better necessarily. And so it's great to reference that stuff all the time. And I really try to a lot and try to see why something was good then and, you know, and try to implement it for myself. The Zelda games for sure. The more recent games that are massive inspirations for me, it's not that recent. Shadow of the Colossus, I think, is probably one of the best games ever made. Easily Journey, I think, is incredible game. And then Inside, recently, a really, really good game. These are all huge inspirations for the game, also for Song of Iron, also. Inside, gotcha. Obviously, kind of you guys have seen some of the videos, it's very in that style. Just instead of a boy, it's a Viking in a magical Nordic world. But you know, like, I think, there's a lot of really good stuff in the way they made Inside, and so I just kind of thought, like, you know, could it be, could it still work this other way? And so far it's going pretty good. when I'm playing by myself or like with some friends, it's always Rocket League, League of Legends, competitive games, or mm-hmm. I'll go real hardcore and I'll go into DayZ, Arma stuff. I played PUBG a ton, like way too much for a bit. And I was coming from the DayZ Arma world, so I was playing like crazy tactically and like, you know, doing all this wild stuff and
owning all the kids. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, there was a moment where I was really good at the game, and like, you know, I think I was 76th in North America or something
Yeah, we need to game together, bro. I love sweaty shooters, so
yeah.
Mule's been saying for a long time he needs more sweaty player friends because we're more laid back, and he's like, I need some more people to sweat with.
Gotta win. Gotta use the strategies.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, we all become better players because of it, but it's not a lot of our speed.
Yeah, no.
Mule's back's been arching lately because of that backpack.
Leaning forward. Oh yeah, sure. That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, obviously that's a massive range of stuff, right? But I just good games are good games, you know?
Yeah.
That is so true.
I remember when PUBG was at its height because we went to PAX as media. Gosh, what was it, 2018? And Brendan was there, and I got to meet him. And I got a video of him saying, "Winner, winner, chicken dinner."
Nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, what a good game.
So what were you saying, Lupo, about X-Men? I heard you piping up. Or not X-Men.
Mega Man X. It's just like Mega Man X is like that first game. Like Joe said, like it's the one that like really sticks out in your head. It's like, man, this is how games work. You know, this is how games can work in the future. Like there was so much there. The backstory of Mega Man in general, like it's Mega Man's my favorite series of like all time. Like as far as like older series go, like obviously Mass Effect is like my favorite right now, but Mega Man has just been like that constant over the last 30 something years, you know, like such a good game. It's so influential too. Like so many games have like taken so much like influence from Mega Man just because it was really like the first game of its kind, like having to use your, you know, your knowledge base of like what other enemies do to be able to power up against other enemies, you know? So
yeah, I can see that.
It's a brain game, you know.
A lot of games have developed from that style, but I have a confession. I've only played like half of one Mega Man ever.
Honestly, you could take out every single Mega Man game as long as you play X. Mega Man X is the definitive Mega Man experience.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
I think it might have been X.
Well,
at least I'll say it was.
I want to check Joe's level of Mega Man-ness. Did you know the little cheat with the second controller where if you push like up and diagonal, you get like a infinite jump that jumps you like all the way up?
I did not know that.
Yes.
That's awesome.
You can jump in the pits and jump right out and not die. So
awesome.
Yeah.
So. Oh, was it the dog would come and get you? You out with the second controller?
It was like a huge, like boosted jump.
Just
you could
boost
use.
Jump. Oh, yeah. Okay. That's awesome. Like some kind of smash the controller on your couch.
I would put my kitchen chair on the second controller to hold it down so that
I could jump on it. Oh my God. That's
the
awesome.
Birth of spamming.
Yeah. Jeez.
Who needs macros when you have your kitchen bar
kitchen
stool?
Kitchen chair.
Yeah,
that's so funny.
I did have one of those controllers with the macros on it where you could flip it and it would just spam like A or something. And that was always fun. Yeah.
Awesome.
So Lupa was talking about like how, you know, some games you pull like really cool things from games. Is there anything that kind of influenced you where like, I don't know your developmental process, but I feel like sometimes with developers, you might see something really cool and try to put your own spin on it. Is there anything like during the developmental, because like we said earlier, it was a shooter and now it's that's Vikings. It's
I mean the shooter change was like a full like I need to stop this project because it was a huge project. I mean, it was impossible. It was open world, you know. It was basically DayZ, but just like I was trying to do it myself, and so that was just, it was way too much. But yeah, all the time. I think I don't think much of the game is original in like a funny way, but maybe the combination of elements is the original thing. Cause it's all, I mean, it's classic stuff. Everything's kind of been done before to some extent. And it's just trying to understand what's super good about those elements and bringing them in sort of their most pure form as best as I can, or I can understand. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the Mega Man thing as an example, you know, in Mega Man X, you go from normal Mega Man to Mega Man X, and you just find there's one piece of gear in this level. You go and you find it, you've got it, and that's it. You have it now. And that's exactly how I'm doing the armor system for Song. It's just, it works so well. It's so clean. I was describing it to someone recently, like, I'm trying to take all the decision making for that stuff and the worry that you're like doing something poorly or making a bad build. Like, don't worry about it. I'm going to do all that for you. You're going to have a strong, cool dude by the end. Just like enjoy the ride. And I think the Mega Man system that they had in Mega Man X works so well for that. And so you just don't even need to worry about it. Yeah. Other stuff, you know, the three big games I mentioned earlier, Shadow Colossus, Inside, Journey, the story from those games, there's like collectively like 1,000 words in all three of those games or something, right? Like and most of that's coming from Shadow of the Colossus, but each one of those worlds, like, they're so deep, there's so much to them. You could probably tell me the story of those worlds, even if no one had ever, there's no words in those games. Or dialogue or anything. And so that's a massive inspiration to me of how can I, you know, do it similarly and just kind of create this world that doesn't need to be explained to everybody constantly.
See, I like that concept where you can completely explain a story and a world and everything involved with it without words. If you can accomplish that in a game without words, that's saying a lot about how the game was developed and how what is being portrayed in that. So kudos for that goal.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, that's the hope. I'm sure there's going to be, even right now, there's plan. There's like a few, like, okay, here's the kind of kickoff. It's probably more aligned with Shadow of the Colossus. They'll be like, here's the kickoff a little bit. Mm-hmm. Go for quite a long time. Here's a little bit more. Go, ending moment. And then that's probably all the dialogue you'll get, other than, you know, grunts and screams and all that kind of stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Like, I was watching some of your videos, and like it, like you're even talking about it now. Like, you like all of these different things, but if you put so many things into one game, you're not doing anything great, you know. So like, mm-hmm. you're talking about like your passion towards like telling a story without having to like necessarily like deliberately tell the story. You know, like that's something you can really focus on deeper if you don't have like these giant massive worlds, you know, or mm-hmm. You know, how good the melee combat is, and you know, in a side scroller, if you're not worried about, you know, the 360 degrees of directionality in a shooter, you know. So like, I can definitely appreciate that like, you know, you want to understand what your best aspect of the game is and focus on those particular things rather than try to put a little bit of like too much and, you know, kind of miss out on the things that you really could do better on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I'd rather do 4 things really well and mm-hmm. instead of 20 things like okay. That's why there's no real loot system. That's another reason to not have gear. It's just like, here's your gear. And that's like a million times easier to develop. And then it's basically done already, like completely shippable. I never have to look back at it. And that's great. I can just work on the stuff that's really important, you know, way more than the other stuff. Yeah.
So, yeah. Cause I think like a lot of story elements now like go understated, you know, especially in a game, which, you know, in concept, so like conceptually, like, simple, like you're worried about like the combat, and the graphics are phenomenal for a game that's not finished, you know. Like I was really impressed with like everything that I've seen so far, you know. And
yeah, thank you.
It's a testament to like your passion for it, and like I just like love the way that you explain it to people. Like your project here isn't necessarily just making the game itself, it's making other people understand what they might go through designing a game, you know. I think that's been fantastic too. Like I have a lot of friends who have tried to get into game design. My little brother's actually in school for coding right now, trying to get into game design as well. Yes. And it's not easy, you know. Like, and a lot of people will give like those a lot of the negative things first. Like, oh, it's a lot of work, you know. Like, which people understand. You're like, hey, look, like do something you love, be good at these couple of things and make a really good game by yourself. You can do these things if you have the experience to do it.
Yeah, it's all, I love talking about this stuff, and it is like the most fun career possible, I think. And so, the hard work is fun. It's like training is how I think of it kind of always. It's, if you want to play sports, you just play a bunch, and that's all I'm doing.
So Doof in chat said he just looked at the game and the concept looked sick. So he looks like he's pretty excited. So I got to ask, you were talking about like the weapons. So basically there's no micromanaging you have to worry about. So how does that work with like leveling and things like that? Is it basically as you go through the story, you get a better shield, you get a better axe? I mean, because that flaming axe was freaking awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. That stuff's coming along. So the core concept of all that is that other than your gear, like your helmet, chest armor, that sort of stuff, nothing is permanent at all. And I don't want you to be attached to any of it whatsoever. I describe combat in a way like a barroom brawl, I think is the best way to do it. It's like grab whatever's close, hit it over someone's head. It's going to break. Grab another one and hit that one over someone's head. Yeah. Throw the chair across the room. Like pick up another chair. Like the flaming part of the axe actually comes from the gear. So as you unlock and kind of level up by unlocking the gear, Mega Man style, you get the abilities and the gear puts it on the weapon. So every axe is a fire axe. If you have the thing, then you have mana.
Nice.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Simple, so it's
awesome.
That's the hope. Yeah. It's, and there's another draw. Like, I actually really liked the Zelda Breath of the Wild, like forcing you to move on from your weapons. Something kind of interesting. I understand why it was a pain, and I definitely like got frustrated plenty playing it, but there is something good there. And so I just tried to make it so it was fine to lose the weapon. Because I just put all the power in you and not in the weapon at all. And it also came from, I want to throw this axe, but now I don't have an axe. So what do I do? Oh, I'll just make all of them the same. And there, done. Like it just works.
Know. Yeah.
Power not in the weapon, power's in you. This sounds like something from Thor.
that was not intentional, but I'm gonna run with it. We're going.
Yeah, power's in your hammer, the power's in you, son.
Right.
Odin.
Yeah.
Odin is with us.
Yeah. Odin is with us. That's good.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You can
quote me on that in the credits too. I will say also, leading to one of the questions on here, when Doof brought it up and how he said he loved the concept, I came across it on Twitter and was like, okay, Valhalla was kind of in the talk for a while, and then I saw this side scrolling flaming axe chopping things up, hiding in the dark side scroller. I'm like, this looks really cool. And I just fell in love with the concept. I literally sat there for a while, like, okay, I watch all the videos now. I see where it came from, I see what it is now. Mule, we gotta talk to this guy. This is amazing. Yeah. And next thing we know, Xbox drops a trailer. I'm like, what? This is awesome. Yeah. So your game is coming out soon with Xbox. So what has your experience been working with ID Xbox?
Honestly, it's been amazing so far. It sounds like a marketing pitch almost, but like it's clear to me that all they want is to help people like myself and others make good games and bring them to the ecosystem. And that ecosystem is massive, and not just Xbox, but it's only an exclusive to consoles. So I'm coming to Steam also, which is, is amazing for indies. Like, we need to be able to do that to kind of survive and stuff. And so it's that sort of mentality that Microsoft has and like the ID at Xbox team has that makes this whole thing just like an incredible thing to be a part of. And then just generically with them, I mean, they're just super supportive for everything that I'm trying to do. And it's really like, you can do whatever you want. You can say whatever you want. Just come on over to Xbox, and it's been, fantastic.
Big brain.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, it totally follows the model that, they're doing with just the Game Pass stuff and just all their stuff. It all lines up, it's very, it's not even Xbox. It's full Microsoft's kind of push to empower everybody to create or whatever it is. But they totally live and breathe it. So it's been awesome.
That's awesome, because I feel like sometimes like us as gamers, we don't get a chance to see some of these amazing indie games, like our friends from Solar Purge, Akarid, who was here in chat earlier. He had a similar experience because we got to know them through PAX a while back, and he was talking about ID Xbox as well. So what all goes into that? How do you make contact with that? And then do they have any kind of control over things that you have to develop, or do you have to meet certain requirements? Like what's the deal with that?
You can just apply. I think it's, I don't know the URL off the top of my head, but you can just apply to ID at Xbox with a pitch, or, you know, you basically pitch them, you pitch them your game, give them a demo. I did like a one sheet and then like a longer pitch doc and the demo, but they actually reached out to me after that first Reddit post went really big.
Yes.
And they kind of found me through that. And so they came, they came to me, which is great. You know, it's like, hey, okay, cool. Xbox is talking to me now. Yeah, right. I didn't do anything. We just kind of went from there, and then, you know, it's just normal contract conversations about what, but even then, you know, and I can't say much about it, but it's just like, what can you do? What's your plan? And then that's sort of where the contract goes so it's just awesome. I don't think I could be happier.
How did you feel when you saw that come up on the Xbox game showcase? And you're just like, were you like deer in the headlights? Like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Or like,
it was really cool. Yeah. I mean, it was one of those things where like it took a really long time to totally understand that I had been in that show, because like it was just a massive grind to get them the stuff and then to try to make, you know, get all the stuff to them and put the trailer together. And then it was like, I know I hadn't told like any of my friends and stuff that I had gotten on there, so they were all like messaging me all day like, what the heck is this? it's awesome. I mean, it's dream come true sort of stuff. Like, yeah. My game was on E3, basically, right? It's crazy. Yeah. It's awesome.
Man.
Yeah. Honestly, I get those feelings all the time. It's just like every little thing, you know, someone will tweet me or respond or retweet, and it's like, well, why does this person care? Like, this is awesome. It's so fun. Yeah.
Word travels fast, man, when you got something good going on.
It's happening.
And you're not only that, you're a solo indie dev, is correct? You're doing this yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing it myself. This is a fun. Also, I've just recently brought
that's just, I just have to say, that's incredible, man. Like the grind you must be going through to do it by yourself.
Yeah, right now it's definitely pretty crazy, but I did just bring on some audio help. That's the one place where I definitely know I have a weakness. I'm not going to be able to write some cool music, and I definitely need it. You know, it's real important when it's a game with a lot of mood kind of built into it. I need that music. I need really, really good sound effects. And so I brought in, two groups, one to do sound design and one to do music. And I'm super happy about it. And they've been doing awesome stuff. You heard a lot of it in the trailers. So Will Goss did the music. And then the guys at Soundstrike Audio were doing the sound design. So it's not totally solo anymore. They don't work for my company, my one-person company. So you could maybe still call it solo. I don't know where the people will draw the line on me. But I'm gonna keep saying solo because, it, you know, I think it's still true. What do you guys think?
I was just going to say, I was watching one of your videos that was kind of showing, like, some earlier stuff that you had shown off real early this year, and then just seeing stuff to where you're up to now, and it's like, it's night and day, because you've got like mainly just some walking audio, a little bit of fight audio, to full the other characters are making noise, weapons are making noise, you're hearing things in the background, you've got music now. Like, it's definitely like, I was like, at first I was like, Okay. Yeah, this is, I play this, and like, then now it's like, wow, how is this one guy doing all this work?
Yeah, it's been crazy. I honestly give a ton of credit to Unreal Engine, which is just an amazing tool, and it can't be taken for granted that that's a massive part of why, right, I'm able to move as quick as I can and improve and adapt and stuff. And it's really hard to like explain how amazing it is, but yeah, I honestly credit a lot of it to just being in the industry for so long. There's motivation isn't a thing anymore. It's all about sort of knowing to just keep going and being able to push through being bored one day or whatever. And that takes a long time. I mean, everybody who works kind of gets there with that thing, but yeah, staring at code that's not working for 3 days can be real rough sometimes. You just gotta imagine staring at it. Yeah. You just gotta keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had a really good friend, that used to work for BioWare. He worked on, SOTOR. And he'd tell me about those long nights and how there's always a beverage of choice. And I'm working this into conversation here. So, did you ever drink water from a coffee mug? And is that acceptable? Acceptable for you?
I have never drink water from a mug. My mom knows. I don't think it's not unacceptable, but there are better options. I think
like a cup or a glass, you know.
Yeah,
I'm doing a cup tonight. No mug.
Awesome. Well, let's settle something else. Speaking of unacceptable, are you a Crocs wearer? You wear Crocs?
No Crocs.
Okay, that is
throw me under the bus, Thaddeus. That's okay.
The hard pressing questions here on the Analog Assault.
Yeah, watch out. Jeez, you guys are real cruel. This is not fair.
I know, right?
So, no wrong answer.
As long as we're on that topic, is it a GIF or is it a GIF?
Oh my gosh, here we go.
Yes!
Thank you.
Man!
Score one for Team GIF.
Hey, that's okay. Not everyone was an English minor. It's GIF.
Solutions of grammar.
Emphasis on the minor.
Fire.
So something, Joe, we're shifting back gears. So like something that's always been in my head, just as a gamer, is like, how do you even come up with the concept of making a game from nothing? Like, where do you even start? And how did you do that? And why Vikings? How did you get to that point?
Man, there's no easy answer to it. It's all a slow, weird process of discovery. I mean, every time I think when I shifted away from the shooter and decided like I need a smaller game, I need something simpler. I actually was looking at Nidhogg a lot, to bring in another thing that I reference sometimes. If you guys know, like the original Nidhogg, the really, really pixelated kind of fun little thing. That game was just had such little to it. And the combat was really good. And I was like, I'm going to start just trying to get there. Like something super basic like that. No character, nothing to worry about from that sort of stuff. It was just, can I start to get there? And then as it gets there, I go, well, this guy needs to be a character now. I was just playing a really great D&D campaign and I had a great character from that. So I just instantly put him like kind of in my mind as the guy that I was making the story for and the character. And that's still true. This game is full, almost 100% the story from that campaign, which is super fun. Just that's a few little things here and there. My friend ran it, and it was just, I usually run them, and then I was like, I want to play, so I made someone else do it, and he went super sci-fi, and I was like, well, I'm just going to be a Viking, because I didn't get to play the other campaigns where we were doing fantasy still, so I just made like some Viking guy, and I was like, here's my story, and it didn't match anything, but his thing was hysterical. It was perfect. So, but then, I mean, it's seriously just a lot of small ideas and you just try to take them forward just a little bit until you get it. And then that always just sort of blooms new ideas or new connections, or when you dead end, then you turn back and see, you know, what it was. It's sort of like a boring answer, but it's such an organic process. Yeah. I think it's the only way to go. And then there's points where you go, okay, I need a story. Like I need to for sure have a story. And then you spend some time and you work through that and you develop it a little bit. And then you go back to the game and start implementing those concepts in. And then you do these big shifts for a little bit just to make sure that you're building towards the right stuff. But yeah, it's just a big, big, long, fun thing. Yeah.
Nice. Well, speaking of Vikings, what's the setting of the game? What can you tell us about it as it is now without spoiling too much, I guess?
Sure.
I'm saying.
No, yeah, it's too short to spoil. That's one of my greatest fears. It's with the kind of consumable playtime that I've got, I'm so afraid of like telling too much. But the setting is fine. The setting is a mythic Nordic vibe world. It's most likely not going to be actually Thor. It's not actually, you know, in the world. It's just, you know, 90% of it. And I think that's going to give me a little bit of creative freedom, but still, you know, people are going to absolutely go, oh, well, this is this thing. Cool. Got it. Like, and it is, you know, the ravens are in it. And, you know, some of that stuff is in it, the trolls and stuff, it's all there. But it's just, I just wanted to be able to break a few rules. And so I'm just staying clear of, you know,
so it's in the same mythological Thor type like stuff. Vikings or the Vikings who worship the I guess the Asgardians and their gods.
Basically, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yep,
okay.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And it's an incredibly harsh world. And it's created these guys to be just the craziest, hardest people. And they war with each other all the time. And, you know, they breed these massive warriors because of it. One of the small changes that I'm making from the sort of traditional story is Valhalla isn't an afterlife place. It is a place that you're invited to when you have done something amazing in battle. Battle's over.
Okay.
One of the gods will come down among the people and like award you an opportunity. Like an invitation has been sent to you. You were given that option and you said no and you stayed.
Oh, dang. Okay.
Oh
yeah. And, you wanted to stay with your loved one and you didn't want to leave. And so you're like, you're the best. And you said no, which is like, you know, goes all the way against everything about it. Right. Yeah. And so that's kind of about where it starts. Yeah.
Right on, man.
Yeah.
So there's some. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Brian. Go ahead, man.
I'll say we saw in the combat there's flame elements. We saw there's lightning elements. Is there any other elements or magical type things involved aside from those two things?
Yeah, there's. I'm still trying to work on how to keep it simple and like the ability to switch the fire axe to lightning axe or whatever and that kind of stuff, trying to make sure it can be really simple. But the intent would be to let you flicker through a couple different elementals. I think ice would be the third one. If I do a third one, I think that's the one that kind of makes the most sense. So yeah, the hope is to have basically those three, if that can all be smooth. And then some of the enemies will have some of that stuff. Some of it will be just like a torch that's literally just, you know, a fire torch. And then some of the more mythical things are going to definitely have some elemental and some magical abilities that you'll have to deal with.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah. Right on.
Yeah. But the line that I'm trying to draw is I never want you to feel like you've gone into some sort of superhero game. I want it to all feel as grounded as possible. Like the fire axe should never go past feeling like it's been lit on fire. The lightning is just barely light, you know, it's just charged up enough to feel like a lightning thing, but not, you know, you're not shooting bolts through 40 guys or nothing right. that extreme. So
yeah, it's more realistic.
Yeah, it's grounded. I keep calling it.
There
it's
you all, go, grounded.
Yeah,
perfect. Boots on the ground. Yeah,
yeah. Boots on the ground. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So we also see like some mythical creatures, it looks like, in some of your footage. Mm-hmm. So what exactly is all this about?
It's more of the world. You know, I want the world to feel like it's part of that mythical stuff, and it's not just a bunch of humans running around with some of, you know, their gods. Like the magic is real. There are trolls, there are goblins, more of the more Nordic legends are kind of, I'm working on them now. It should just feel like the fantasy world of Nordic myth for the most part. Mm-hmm. And bringing in those characters is a big part of it. And I try to look to inspiration of like art of that stuff and not just like the more classical trolls and goblins and stuff. And they all, I mean, they obviously all come from each other. They're all inspired by each other a bunch, but you know, big schnozzes and all that kind of like more cartoony North troll thing. And it's, and I'm just trying to keep it there a little bit and not go to the more modern look of stuff just a little, just to kind of be more true to that mythology as much as I can, at least.
I definitely got vibes of more classic, what you see almost more like the first Lord of the Rings kind of feel. I got vibes of when the big troll comes out of the cave. I was like, oh, yeah, it's kind of, I kind of feel like we're in some deepier for a second there.
Yeah, awesome.
And then they perfect. Looking at some of your, like, you had in one of your videos just the model without textures and anything on it. You looked like you were working on it in different angles. And you could see that you had done a lot of work into it. Just, it's not all the textures. It's fully modeled everything. It's not some 2D animation. It's not completely blank on the other side of it.
You
put a lot of work into this.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's, yeah, the game is full 3D. Like if I were to draw, pull the camera out and look around, it's there's a whole built world.
I was going to say that before too. Like to see how deep like a 2D like screen is, it's still like there's everything. Like if you see the cave, you see all the way to the back of the cave. Like it was kind of wild to see like how much detail was put into just beyond like what you see in the forefront, you know.
Yeah, it's to me it's almost like a cheat. Like it's easier to just build it because I can just like I can see that in my head, and when I'm making it in the engine, it's easy. You just kind of make this world, and then the 2D-ness just kind of happens because of the camera. A lot of people do. It's probably a little more expensive, but a lot of people try to do the cheaper way where they're doing a lot of fakery for that kind of stuff. And that's just, that's math I don't want to do. That I'm, you know, it's like, and it's cooler. I mean, it works with the lighting way better to be realistic because the Unreal Engine's lighting is a physics-based lighting. So it's all the math to the light is real. And so it needs the space to be real. And so it just sort of was this perfect kind of, I don't know, synergy, to use a super awesome term.
Is that why it looks like it pops off the screen so much? Like when you're looking at the graphics of the game? Like, I don't know a better term to say it other than it pops. It like looks clean.
It's a huge part of it. I think I kind of stumbled upon the fog with the really silhouette-y moments that you've seen probably a lot in it. And that was just like, crank the fog up, turn all the lights off. Oh no, the fog has its own light. Wait, this looks great. Don't turn that, like leave it, like awesome, you know?
Nice.
And it's just been discovery. And I mean, that's part of the process too. It's like, whoops, no, wait, I'm keeping this.
Right?
Yeah, and it looks
we're not made.
You definitely get like that environmental vibe of like a lot of Norse mythology is more colder, wetter areas. And when you got like that, like you're saying, that fog, it makes it a little more, just gives you kind of paints a picture of what's going on in the world, like what your world, how your world is set up without having, 'cause like you were saying, there's very little dialogue at all. So having stuff like that definitely helps. And the fact that that Unreal gives you all this stuff is just amazing.
It's awesome. I mean, there's going to be more. I mean, there already are. I mean, there's thousands of games being made constantly by indies. It's just going to keep getting better because of the stuff they're doing. It's awesome.
These are the facts.
Yeah. But yeah, the fog stuff's cool. I think it really like grounds the game again in like this sort of very Nordic-y kind of vibe. I mean, the vibe is there just with that, I think. So yeah, it's cool.
Right on. Yeah. So, I gotta say, like, I'm looking at the game and I keep watching the trailers, and is it just the engine mostly? Is it part of the animation to make it just? I mean, because like again, it just looks so clean. Is that like tools that you're using through the engine, or and how did you come up with those environments? Like Crow was saying, is it just all based off Nordic, like weather elements and things like that?
So the I hope animation is doing a lot of that. Being where I come from, it was one of the like three pillars that I kind of set for myself for the game. It's like, I can do this really well, so I better make something where I can shine animation a little bit. And so a fighting game is a really natural place for that. So there, I mean, there is, you know, the animation is the highest quality thing in here from like what skills that I'm able to put into it directly. But a huge thing is that, so Unreal, again, they purchased a company that does mega scans. If you know what that is, it's basically you take 1,000 photos of an object every angle. Yeah. And then a computer turns that into a 3D object, like a perfect, realistic 3D object. And so they bought a company that does it. And so they gave all those assets away for free. And then so I've been able to take in, you know, true north trees from that region, foliage from that region, nice. Rocks and stuff from like directly from Iceland. Like this is a real rock from Iceland. Like,
wow.
And then, so it's super cool. And like putting layering those things in is done a ton to make the game look really good. And then I try to put twists on everything. So it's not just raw, what they kind of gave us. And you know, they're like, I'm mossing everything up way more. And I think I show that in one of those videos, like one of my gifts I made where I made like a procedural moss thing. So moss is growing on literally everything. That's a huge help. And then just building the environment itself, it honestly is just like sketching. I just start putting stuff in. You can sculpt the terrain to be hilly and stuff. And you can paint trees in. And I always just try to have like one cool Nordic-y thing out in the back. I think like there's always like a ruin of something or, you know, a statue or whatever. Yeah. And that always just tells you, again, you're just always being told what's going on in the world and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
Well, speaking of world, question, levels wise, are we going to be venturing to other parts? Like I know in the Asgard and Nordic, the Nordic mythology, there's multiple realms, the fire realm, the ice realm. Are we going to be venturing anywhere close to that? Or is it still kind of grounded on, you know, Earth and that mythology? How are the levels going to look? Or do you know yet?
So you're in this, you won't go to any other realm. Okay. The whole game is going to be basically one long level, and you pretty much go from where you start, and you're going all the way to the home of the gods, where you're trying to get to. And it's a linear, just sort of like I think I've shown it in some of my things, but I have the entire game in one map, and I can pull all the way back, and I can see the whole track of the game. And so the hope is that it also feels like you made this long, you know, small section of a Lord of the Rings journey, and you really go all the way. And one of the things that does it, which is really cool, is sort of halfway through, you go through a mountain range a little bit, and you can see those mountains coming kind of the whole time when it's not too foggy. And then you basically end up going through them, and now the mountains are on the other side of the screen, slowly receding, you know, to the side, because it's like a really long valley. But that's like you're kind of like actually going through a giant open world, just on a really fine little slice, you know? And I hope it feels like that the whole time. That's definitely the goal. So it just feels like you walked all the way there and you didn't just teleport, you know, between levels or anything like that.
Right.
So then past that, you know, you'll go through a bunch of terrain. There's cave stuff, there's old dense forest, and then it goes up and you climb mountains into mountain snowy caves, and then you're climbing out at the top of mountain and snow and all that. So there's a decent variety of kind of location types, I guess.
Yeah.
Right.
So
what about weapons? Are we going to see just the axe and the bow, or we have other weapons in mind?
There's more coming. Yeah. I'm working on some stuff right now, and I'm planning on showing really soon. I think I've been trying to, it's like, part of showing all the stuff that I'm working on, it's like wanting to hold back some stuff, but it's hard. I can never do it for very long. So there's, I think there's a bunch of stuff to talk about pretty soon. And yeah, so stay tuned for that.
I will say what you have been doing is showing off your process, showing off the game. It's been great. From an amateur PR perspective, that is definitely going to get you a lot of attention. And that's just going to get more eyeballs and more customers. And that's just smart what you're doing.
Have you?
Cool. Thank you.
Have you ever thought of streaming some of your development of the game? Like just streaming it and talking through some of your processes?
Yeah, I have. I honestly think it'd be really cool. My just fear is like saying something stupid on there and spilling something or like.
Have you watched our show?
People reading the code that's like got, you know, secrets in it, that sort of stuff. But I think, you know, like when I'm animating or something, I think that'd be an awesome thing. And I keep,
yeah, for sure,
kind of thinking I should do it, especially it'd be a YouTube thing probably, just because that's where I don't really have a Twitch audience, but I'm starting to get a YouTube audience, and it would work. It'd be super cool. I'd love to do it. Yeah.
Lupo, I see you're contemplating something over there. Did you want to say something?
No, I'm taking everything in. Like it's interesting to actually have like the you know the history that Joe has and you know the experience that he has, and like I watch his videos and like I was inspired like to want to be a developer even though I have no skill to do those types of things, you know, like just like how he talked and like, you know, understanding his process. It's like sometimes seeing how things are made is more enjoyable than seeing the thing in use sometimes, you know, like not saying like this is gonna be a bad game, but it was really fascinating to see his like start to finish things, seeing like the things move, like the, you know, seeing the whole program, like you know, like I come from a music background, so I know how music programs work, and seeing like you know, the Unreal Engine move and seeing all like the keynotes and stuff like that of how like the characters move is really cool.
Yeah, it's
so fun. He's talking, I'm like recanting all that in my head. You know?
Yeah, so, I mean, building it and talking about it has become my video game also. You know, it's like I've seen behind the curtain so much that some games that should be really fun kind of aren't in a certain way. And now making them is the new challenge in a way. So, yeah.
The dev perspective.
Yeah, it happens.
So, Joe, is there any other things you wanted to touch on while you got your captive audience here, you got your listeners? Anything else you want to share about the game that we didn't maybe touch on or ask?
World premiere.
Stay tuned for a lot of cool stuff coming soon. Now, honestly, you know, I think we hit a lot of the really good stuff. I just would always encourage people to ask questions. I mean, a lot of people reach out to me and ask questions about general development or, you know, advice for stuff. And I try to answer all that stuff because I love it. I love talking about all that. But yeah, and I keep veering the conversation into more and more of that angle because it's super fun. You know, I love it. Someone's asked me something. Is there anything you'd run into making a game where you know you can make that part better, but it isn't coming up? Yeah, sorry, I'm looking at Anger's response here. Yeah. He's asking if I ever just run into a wall, basically, and can't fix a problem I'm having. It totally happens. And I literally just stopped my answer to answer someone about a game development. I can't help.
I love it.
I can't help myself.
That's totally cool.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, it happens. You know, I think it probably happens with everybody with every thing where you just like, you know, this thing should work and you just can't figure out what it is. Sometimes you just gotta let it die or, you know, or walk away for a really long time. I think, you know, if I were to explain what I've been doing is like my process to a normal game dev or like another game dev or designer, I think they would think I was crazy in a lot of ways. Cause I just sort of said, I'm going to do this system. And then I didn't prototype it. I was like, cause my brain was like, stealth systems work. We play them all the time. Like I can come up with some level of a stealth system and it'll be all right. Like I'm confident in that. Like we've done it before. And I think there's sometimes too much of a worry of like recreating something that has been done so many different ways successfully. And it's way better to try to understand what the pure bit of that their system is that's good, and then to go from there. But yeah, it happens. Everybody, I mean, I run into stuff and I go, well, this very simple thing should be easy, but it's beyond me right now.
And I sometimes forgot to ask that too. There is stealth in the game. I did notice that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yep, there's some stealth. It's nothing too crazy. It's a lot of like pretty simple sneaking around, but it should, I think it'll be really cool. And one of the things that I wanted it for was a reason to have enemies in the foreground and the background, even though it's, you know, a side scroller. And mm-hmm. so they can see you from off the plane of combat basically, and then come into there. So it kind of lets me play with perspective a bunch. And you know, they're patrolling kind of in the foreground, and then sometimes they're like a shadow will just cross the screen and it's a guy, you know, and he's got a torch or whatever it is. And it just, it makes the world feel so much more, you know, like big and real.
Yeah.
Even though you are just stuck on that line, but.
So you're saying it's like, not only are they behind you, sometimes they're even in front of you. Like,
yeah, yep. There'll be
more play on this. To the camera. Like, this is not just 2D. You might be playing 2D, mm-hmm. but, or side scroll, but it's a full world.
That's what I was trying to say earlier, because I noticed that's what it felt like. It felt like it wasn't 2D. It felt full.
Yeah. Like, you're the only thing trapped on that plane. You know, like, everybody else kind of can move around. Once they get on there, they're not going to, like, run off and come back in and stuff. But,
yeah.
Like, the troll that someone brought up, he comes running up from the background.
Yeah, he looks like he's coming out of a cave, mouth of a cave.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think there's a quick shot in the trailer where I'm like kind of running away from a bunch of guys, and they're all pouring out of the background and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Yeah. So yeah, it adds so much depth to the world, and it makes those spaces full levels, even though you're just trapped on that the one.
Oh, man.
That's cool.
I can't wait. So the game right now tentatively is set for Xbox Series X, Xbox One, and Steam spring 2021. Is that correct, Joe?
Yeah, late spring is about where I'm targeting right now. Yeah. That's the hope. We'll see. Yeah. No promises yet, but that's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Where can all the listeners and viewers, where can they find all your info and these cool videos that we're talking about? Where's all the socials, man?
The good stuff. Everything is under Song of Iron. You can just search Song of Iron, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, Steam as well. It should pop up pretty much the first that everywhere. Branded
down.
Yeah. It seems like a name that should have been gone like 20 years ago for some reason. And I don't know. It's just no one had it. I'm super happy about it, but
yeah,
I'll take it. Yeah. I'm all for it. But yeah, Twitter's my most active. That's definitely the place I share the smallest and little bits of progress the most. So then YouTube, maybe monthly almost, where I'll do a bigger, longer video about how I'm doing stuff and all that. Yeah. Yeah. And then wishlisting helps big time. That's the best thing. If you're interested, wish list, because then you don't have to follow and get bombarded. Yeah. You can just find out when it launches pretty much.
Yeah. So for all you guys that are listening to the audio version, we'll throw that wish list in the link in the description for you guys. So you can find it there for us. Joe,
appreciate it.
Thank you so much for joining, man. I'm super excited. I know the listeners and the people who are watching the stream are excited, man. I can't wait. I can't wait to see more that you're throwing out there, man. So thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I love it. It was really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, guys,
total pleasure.
Yeah, for sure. If you like the podcast and you like what you see, then make sure you visit MuleHornGaming.com about page to find more great content creators like us. And if you're looking for some Mule swag, make sure you click on the store link there as well. And if you would, guys, like us on Facebook, leave us a review on iTunes. You can follow us all on Twitter. Remember, guys, when in doubt, blow it up!
Blow it up!
I'm business with business.
Explosion!
Bang! Lightning arrows? I don't know.